RunAsRadio.com. You're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 150 with guest Doug Toombs, recorded Monday, February 2nd, 2010. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow the boys on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell. With me, as always, my co-host, Greg Hughes.
Hey, everyone. Richard.
Sir.
How are you? What's going on?
I am well.
Good.
And things are good. And we're doing a little Run As Radio, so why don't we jump right into it? I have a guest and everything.
Sounds good.
We're bringing back Doug Toombs. He's a contributing editor for Windows IT Pro and an author of a number of books, including his latest ebook, Keeping Your Business Safe from Attack, Monitoring and Managing Your Network Security. Available from Windows IT Pro eBooks at windowsitlibrary.com. And you can reach out to Doug via his email address at help@toombs, that's TOOMBS.US. Welcome back, Doug.
Hey, Doug.
Thank you, Richard. Thanks, Greg. Good to be here again.
So as I recall from our last show, you are the free tools guy. Like, you know every gadget out there for the IT pro.
Yeah, it's kind of been a bit of a, I think, obsession over the past few years with Windows IT Pro magazine in a series of articles. And from what I'm hearing from my my counterparts of the magazine, these articles are always, you know, very well received. People love going and finding these. And sometimes going and finding these tools really takes a lot of work, but it's kind of a... I think it's a little bit of a reward when you find something that really, as soon as you see it, you're like, oh, it's going to make that task so much easier.
Right.
When you go and you find these. So these are great. I always love digging these up.
Well, I guess we should just start at the beginning, right? What do you got for us?
I got about 6 or 7 utilities today that we'll go through here. All of these free. All of these, I've tested. I think they're really, a good addition to the toolbox, whether that's your portable USB drive or whether you move this onto all your systems where you do routine maintenance. So for your system administrator, these, I think, make life easier. First one I'm going to go into is a tool called WinAudit. And this is by a company called Paramvex Services. And, real simple, I guess I should give the URL. It's www.pxserver.com/winaudit.htm.
Okay.
And it's a very, very simple, and this is kind of a little bit of a theme that you'll notice here. It's a very simple standalone executable that can go and get some pretty comprehensive Windows auditing information from your system. So when you want to know, how much hardware you have out there across your entire network, you don't have to go and look for, necessarily a large commercial utility that can go and do all this auditing. This tool does it completely for free. And it gives a pretty comprehensive overview. I know on our last show, we talked about system information for Windows, which gave a pretty exhaustive overview of, BIOS versions and processors and, network cards and settings and all of that. This kind of does this in more of a letting you output it to either HTML or a CSV or some other sort of framework, and it's free. So what I think is kind of nice about this utility is first it works on every Windows platform from Windows 95 all the way up to Windows 2008 and Vista.
Wow.
Windows cool. 7 isn't listed on their website yet, but when I wrote about this for Windows IT Pro magazine, at the time I wrote about it, Windows 2008 wasn't listed on their site, but it is listed now. So they're pretty mm-hmm. good at keeping up on the compatibility. But I can't even imagine with that much backward compatibility that there'd be a problem going forwards. But it'll do very comprehensive auditing. You can run this as a tool where you run it right at the station, and you get the report on screen in HTML and it's all clickable, and you can drill down into specific sections. It's kind of like, the device manager, but on steroids in
right.
that regard. But it also allows you to run command line execution.
Yeah.
And this to me is the really powerful part. So, let's say you go ahead and just over a course of a lunchtime, you modify your network scripts on your network. So when people are logging in, You just call this, command line execution of this tool. It executes automatically. It takes, on one system I tested, it was about 60 seconds for it to generate the report. And then you can have it store the output in maybe a central location somewhere on your network. And you can have it store it as a text file, a HTML file. You can have it output it into CSVs. And I think even off the top of my head, it'll do PDF outputs as well. So it's pretty neat in that you could really very quickly and very simply get an entire exhaustive inventory of your network in almost no time at all for free with this utility. You get it set up, you let it do its thing, pulls all the information in, and it's great. So for that reason, the command line execution and the standalone capabilities, I love this utility, and I love that they put it out there for free.
Do you have to actually install it on the machine? How I'm just thinking from the point of view of I'm sitting at my control console, and I want to push this out to all the desktops and collect all that information and bring it back.
I think you could probably do it a couple of ways. I mean, if you've got a mechanism to push an EXE onto a workstation,
right,
and execute that, you could utilize that mechanism. Or if you have a login script for your network that you can perform various functions during that login script, you can go ahead and utilize that approach.
But it is a standalone executable, though, right? I don't have to actually run an installer to make it work.
Exactly. No, it's 830K, all standalone. So you go ahead and you just drop this into whatever, some sort of share somewhere on your network that presumably all your end users would have access to, call that from the login script, and then just go ahead and have that output into, the output file into another directory where you can store all the results. So that's one of the things that I love about this. I tend to, in these digging up these free utilities, I really tend to favor the ones that are just complete standalones. I'm going, I used to do a lot of consulting and, in working with client systems, and sometimes these are production, SQL servers, Exchange servers, web farms, I didn't want to be going through a whole Microsoft installer utility. I really don't want to leave a footprint on a client system. So this is definitely all standalone.
Well, the fact that this is straight executable means that I could drop this on a file share that everyone has access to, and then modify their login script. So when they log in, it just fires it off.
Right.
And I see there's an option here to export directly to database. So I could just have it write straight to SQL Server for me?
Yeah, any ODBC database location is what it'll support. So it wouldn't even necessarily have to be SQL Server. It could be others that are, ODBC compliant in that regard.
Yeah, it looks like XML output and all kinds of stuff that you could use to for
yeah, that's
different
the,
systems.
There's certainly, a lot of, pre-built commercial utilities out there that do more and maybe are easier setups or something like that, but for free, and that there's so much ability to tinker with that. I mean, that I think that appeals to all of our inner geeks, that we can kind of tinker with and tweak things the way we want them. To me, that just makes this this utility a definite winner.
Yeah, Microsoft has a tool similar to this called MAP. That's the Assessment and Planning Toolkit. I don't know if you've ever used it, but it has an install, and it is free from Microsoft, but it is quite Microsoft-centric too. That's sort of the reality. It's all from their perspective. It's really about how do you get yourself ready to install the next version of Microsoft technology, one way or the other.
Right. Yeah. It's got a, really kind of defined or more obvious purpose.
Yeah.
That's fine. It's nothing against that tool. And if, that's the part of having a toolbox is, sometimes you need a hammer, sometimes you need a screwdriver. So this is one more thing to add into there.
And did I read correctly here that WinAudit literally will go and figure out your licensing state, like what licenses you've got on what machines, that kind of thing?
No, that part it won't do. So, you're setting up a nice lead-in for me here for the next utility that I had on the list.
I'm a nice man.
Thank you.
Carry on, my friend. Keep going.
The next utility was called KeyFinder. And this is from a group called Magical Jelly Bean Software. So their site is magicaljellybean.com, and then it's /KeyFinder, all one word, to get to this utility. And this is a little bit like WinAudit in the regard that it's a very small standalone executable. It's about 600K, and it basically has one function, and that function is to go through and look through your system and find all the license keys it can and bring those out into a centralized report for you to be able to see. This runs on every version of Windows, all the way back to Windows 95. So that includes Windows Server 2008 and Windows 7, just released. And it really does. It uses a predefined configuration file of known registry locations for where various software applications will store their license keys.
Cool.
And it will go ahead and collect all the results and output those into a text or a CSV file for you. And it, again, it's like WinAudit. This is something that can be executed completely on a command line basis. So you were talking before about maybe that login script that you know, launches WinAudit. Maybe after WinAudit is completed, you could launch KeyFinder, have it go and pull out all the license keys for all your applications, and then store those results in maybe a different directory. So you could really have some very powerful auditing of your infrastructure with these two pretty straightforward utilities so far.
Awesome. Yeah, and not much to hack away at this key, at the key finder. Does this pull the actual keys out? Like, normally those are fairly well hidden. The thing you actually typed in when you installed the app, that's what it pulls out?
Yes, yeah. So I'm looking at it right now on my system, and I can see the 25-character license key for my it's a Parallels instance that I have for Windows XP running here, and I can also see the 25 character license key for Office Professional 2007.
Oh yeah, what is it?
It's DVG. No, actually, that was the first three characters. If anybody can guess the remaining 22, you know, you can have it.
Yeah, sir, you have damaged your encryption. You've weakened your security right there. Let's keep moving. What's next?
So a couple more things on KeyFinder before we go into the next one.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
The configuration file that you use for defining where to find all of these things, it's just a really simple text file format. It comes with, I think it was maybe about 100 and some known applications already. So, I mean, just when I installed this app and used it, obviously it knew Windows XP and Office 2007.
Right.
And then it's got, you know, several other known locations for some of these. So as you get maybe more software in your enterprise organization and it's not in this tool, it's just a simple matter to go and modify that config file. And the next time it executes, it's going to scan those new locations as well across, you know, however many stations you have that running over.
Give it a name and specify the registry key and it'll look at it for you.
Exactly, yeah. So you're just adding additional locations to the ones that it already provides. The config file that is provided when you download this, it seems it's a little bit more consumer oriented. So I was looking through the config file, and yeah, there's Windows XP and Office 2007. But then you get some things like, you know, Nero for CD burning.
Right.
And some games and stuff like that. So you can see it's been designed a little bit more, you know, in that regard, it maybe for a consumer audience. But I think from a, you know, a system administrator perspective, it's actually a very valuable tool if you spend a little bit of time, figure out what those additional entries you might need in, and then just modify the config file.
I think it's safe to say that this is a kind of tool that could potentially be used for something that maybe would be inappropriate, but in the context of doing system administration and audit reporting, it's pretty useful.
Absolutely. I mean, this could be if you had a, you know, maybe a concern, it's a two-edged sword, but, you know, maybe you had a concern about software licensing within your organization, and maybe you're, you know, there's concerns that you're not compliant, or some people have been installing, you know, unlicensed copies of software.
Right.
If you have the, you know, known locations on where those keys would be stored, this would be a way to quickly maybe, you know, get a sense of compliance auditing, and you figure out, you know, okay, we're fine, or, you know, maybe we've got some end user concerns that we need to go and address. So, it could be used for nefarious purposes as well, unfortunately.
Well, and this comes down to who has rights into the registry as well, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
In the end, if we have administrators running on our client machines, we have that vulnerability.
It is there. This just makes it easier, yeah.
All right, let's keep moving. What's next?
Okay, so moving on from there, this was in the column that I did in Windows IT Pro, I think the third column on this, I think I said this was just one of my absolute favorites, and it still is. This title, this application was originally JKDFrag by a gentleman, Jerome Kessels, Its name has changed, though. It is now called MyDefrag, and it's available on mydefrag.com. And Defrag doesn't necessarily seem all that interesting initially, but the implementation of this tool is pretty neat, actually. So there are three versions of the MyDefrag tool. They're all standalone executables. Again, you're noticing a theme here.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a sort of a Windows, you know, user interface version. There is a command line version, and there's also a screensaver version, which I thought was kind of neat to do as well. Mm-hmm. This should run on anything that is a Windows 2000 system or later, because this uses the Defrag APIs that were provided when Windows 2000 was released. So,
when
Windows 2000 came out, it had some Defrag APIs built into it and a built-in sort of Defrag utility that's very basic. And I actually knew, you know, some people from, you know, back in the NT days that actually had developed software to do, you know, very powerful defragging. And when I knew those APIs were coming out, I was kind of worried about a few of my friends. I was like, you know, it seems like Microsoft's going to put something out here that's really going to, you know, crimp your business a little bit. But what they put out was very basic. The API is very solid. It's very safe. But their implementation on top of their own API, you know, is very limited. Anybody that's done a defrag of their disk within my computer knows there's really no options on there. JK Defrag, or MyDefrag now, kind of provides all of those advanced options using that safe Microsoft API. So the general concept of JK Defrag, kind of out of the box if you just started using it with all the default settings, is that first it kind of takes a look at your disk and, you know, just kind of analyzes it to see what kind of shape it's in, what files you have, where they are spread out. It works to defragment the files, which obviously gets you a little bit of a speed boost if you're not having to go and have the head seeking all over the drive for all your files.
Right.
And then it tries to do what it calls an optimization. Now, the general theory is if you picture a, you know, physical hard drive, and or maybe you can, for those of us old enough to remember, perhaps a turntable, where the center is actually, if you measured it, is spinning much faster than the outer edges,
right,
in terms of RPMs.
Mm-hmm.
So if you move files that are more frequently accessed or more critical, more towards the center of the actual physical drive, in theory, you should be able to boost your performance even more. So in addition to doing the defragmentation, the tool will also, the MyDefrag tool will also do what they call an optimization. So, and try and move the most critical things to the front of the drive and move the least critical things out to the back of the drive. So I think the default config, if I'm remembering correctly, is that the first thing it will try and do is move all of your directory structure to the front of the drive. Obviously, the directory structure is accessed all the time as Windows is, you know, just running throughout the day. So if that's at the very, very center of the drive, you're going to get the fastest execution possible there.
Right.
It leaves a little bit of margin of space after that for obviously, you know, future growth of the directory structure. And then it puts into that next section in the optimization process what it calls regular files. And it won't go in specific definitions on regular files, but instead we'll talk about the next group after that. It'll put in what it calls regular files, and then a little bit of buffer after that. And then in the third optimization space, it will put in what they call, or what they call on their website, space hogs. So space hogs, kind of a cute name, I think, are files that, and there's a predefined list of what you'd probably consider space hogs, and you can customize this in the utility however you want. But the space hogs would be things like maybe your /i386 directory. This is the directory you keep around for those, you know, 6 or 10 times per year that you need to go and actually reference your source installation media.
Right.
Other than that, you never use it. Well, then it can be pushed, you know, to the outer edges of the drive.
Sure.
Same with the service pack files directory within your Windows directory, tab files, MP3 files, zip files, Microsoft installer files, all of these things that probably don't really get used a whole lot. It takes all of these, and there's a lot of other criteria, some of them based on size or hasn't been accessed in 6 months, things like that. But it'll take all of these and say, these are not not important at all. These are on the bottom of the totem pole as far as importance goes, and it moves them all the way out as far as it can to the edge of the disk, so that you're going to get your, theoretically, your best optimization possible.
So it's not just defragging, but actually reorganizing.
Exactly. And that's what makes this so powerful above and beyond the, you know, the built-in Microsoft defragment tool is obviously that will do a, you know, in some cases a good job to defrag your drive if you have more than, I think it complains if you've got less than 15% available before the defrag. But this will, you know, it'll at least match that, give you more flexibility on the defrag process, and then it's got this optimization. And that's just the one sort of default configuration out of the box that I talked about there. There are so many configuration parameters that you can change on this. As I mentioned, this is something that you can execute as a command line version of the utility. So you can just go ahead and pre-build a list of what your favorite options are and just build a simple batch file for that. So I had one that I created called Doug's Defrag. And it was just simply a batch file that called the JKDefrag, the MyDefrag utility, off the command line, and it added in some new files that were space hogs for me. So maybe it's like TV shows or movies you've downloaded from the iTunes store or something like that. It didn't have all of those extensions in,
right?
So I added those in as well. So we can push those way out to the end of the drive. And then you can take a batch file like that, or you don't even need to have a batch file. If you know your entire command line, you could put that into your scheduled tasks so that your desktop would, once a week try and optimize the storage on your system and make it as fast as possible, maybe overnight when you're sleeping. You could be having this set to run in a more enterprise environment as a monthly maintenance job on your servers if you wanted to. So there's a lot of flexibility in having a defrag utility with, a command line version.
Yeah, very powerful stuff. All right, and there's more info here at mydefrag.com, but we got to keep moving if we're going to get through all these shows at the time we've got available to us. So I'm going to...
Okay, I'll try and speed it up here.
No, don't worry. This is good stuff. I'm really excited about MyDefrag, too. Like, we've always known that API was there and just not really... It's been expensive tools to get access to it, so it's nice to have a free one.
Yeah, it's powerful, and I've definitely seen a difference on the systems that I've used it on. So worth a look.
All right, who's next?
The next is a utility called Eraser, and this is available at eraser.heidi.ie. So it's HEIDI.ie. And so this is a sort of freeware. It's an open source utility that will do secure erases within the Windows environment to make sure that you're wiping out any data that should not be there.
Yeah, I use this tool.
Do you really? That's funny.
Oh, excellent. Very good. Yeah. And I've done some testing with it, and believe me, it erases stuff. You don't get it. But according to some FBI statistics, there's a laptop stolen in the United States every 53 seconds, and 97% of those are never recovered. So for laptop workers traveling with sensitive data, this might be a way to try to mitigate or minimize potential data losses. The utility has a couple of means of execution. It has either, you can run the program in the user interface within Windows, and do just sort of manual, operations in there, pointing to specific directories. You can also, via the user interface, set up scheduled, tasks and times of day to purge, areas within the disk or, certain directories or maybe even certain, file types, across the disk, and then have that executed at certain times of the day. Or there actually is an ability to use this on a command line basis as well. So I did some testing on this. Obviously when you just do a basic delete or an empty recycle bin, things aren't deleted.
Right.
So, but I went ahead and took a bunch of files and I made a directory called C:\not recoverable. Threw a bunch of documents in there. And then went through Eraser and just did a secure deletion on it. And in the deletion passes, you can set up different types of configurations. So you can have it do one or two passes of pseudo random data, or a seven pass data structure, which is I think a United States Department of Defense standard. or even a 35-pass, what they call the Gutman method, of overwriting the data. And once it does that, there's not going to be any recovering it. And the Gutman method, they even talk about it. It kind of gets a little bit CSI about talking about retrieving, you know, latent magnetic signals from the platters. It's pretty sci-fi. But, you know, the option's there. And you can build more profiles if you want to build more.
How nutty would you like to be?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, there are a few people out there that are that's all they do is retrieve latent magnetic data. they tend to work for governments, but and a couple of other places, but it doesn't happen often. But I guess when it does happen, it's a big deal.
I'm not sure. I'm even convinced it's really all that possible. But yeah, we'll assume the sci-fi is true, and it is. So, but the Gutman method in theory should wipe it out beyond any possibility of retrieving it even on that level.
You know, one of the issues with erasing data, the file is still on the file system, so actually writing over the file itself. But maybe are you able to talk about slack space? You know, cache type information and whatnot.
Well, it depends on where where the cache type of information is. So if it's in the page file, obviously Eraser can't really deal with something that's in the paging file, for instance, on the root of the C drive. So it can't deal with that. It's got to be in some sort of file structure where the application can, you know, obviously get a hold of it and have full read-write access to it. So the page file is obviously going to prohibit that from happening. But pretty much anywhere else on the disk, it should be able to take care of that.
All right, what you got next?
The one thing that I was kind of pondering with this utility, and it's something that I think I need to tinker around with, was I was contemplating, you know, can you build sort of a secure phone home remote wipe capability with this? You know, could you do something with VBScript or PowerShell that would check in with, you know, some sort of central server you have, and if it sees, you know, it sees some sort of indication that that laptop is now stolen, it will go ahead and just start wiping out like every doc file, Excel spreadsheet, something like that across the entire drive through the command line. So that's a fun, I think that'd be a fun task for somebody to see if they could make that happen with this utility. But moving on to the next one here is the utility that I used to make sure I was not able to retrieve it. And, you know, and I'm not one of the three letter agency guys that can, you know, read the latent magnetic signals off of a drive platter, but there's a great utility out there called PhotoRec. And on our last free utilities podcast, we talked about Test Disk right towards the end, which is a free utility from Christoph Greiner at CG Security. And that was for, trying to recover a drive that has incurred some sort of logical structural, you know, damage for something like that.
Right.
Not physical, obviously. When you get that thunk, thunk, thunk sound, you're probably done.
Yeah.
But, you know, if there's something wrong with the file allocation table structure or the partition structure, that test disk utility will hopefully be able to try to recover that for you so you can get most of your stuff back. This kind of approaches things from a second method. So, and I forgot to mention the URL. So it's cgsecurity.org/wiki/photorec. And this tool uses a technique that they call data carving. Now, we've kind of already talked about, you know, if you delete a file, really all it does is it's just marking the directory entry in the file system as, well, this is now deleted. And those sectors on the drive are available for reuse at some point in the future. That's why, obviously, if you try to undelete a file, as soon as you've deleted it, you get everything back. It's not a problem. And the recycle bin doesn't really change that in any regard. But what happens if you lose that directory entry, but maybe some of the portions of the file are still out there? So now you're in a situation where you need to recover at least as much as you can. And part of the reason that the utility got the name PhotoRec is because apparently it happened with Christoph, is that he had a memory card for a camera that, you know, had some sort of corruption in the directory entries or something, but he knew all the photos were still there. Obviously, there's the directory entry, which then points to then the series of sectors. So he knew the photos were still there. So he actually went and developed this utility to go in and sector by sector across the entire drive, look for signatures of, probably they were JPEGs at the time he was doing it, and extract the entire file and then put it into a new, you know, safe location. And over time, this has actually grown to the point where I think now he has about 200 known file types, including, you know, Word documents, spreadsheets, obviously photos, PowerPoint presentations, even more obscure things like, you know, QuickBooks files and formats and things like that. And what this will do, and this process might take a while, is sector by sector, it will look through the entire drive that you pointed at and literally try and do a recovery of every bit of data that it can. So now the downside on this is that obviously you don't have your directory entries, so you don't know that your, you know, your photo was named, you know, europevacation.jpg or something when you get it back. It's going to have some random, you know, letters and numbers for a file name, and you'll have to go through them manually after the fact. But the fact that you can actually get these back once the directory entry is destroyed is really amazing. So it's pretty cool. So the final output on this will be a series of files with their proper extension types, you know, JPEG, CAB, DOC, whatever, names that are going to be incomprehensible. And then you can go through them and, you know, figure out what they were. But it's going to do everything it can to retrieve that data for you.
Very cool.
Yeah, and great to know this thing. I've also seen that it'll actually go after the media cards. So not just drives, but
storage,
memory cards.
Yeah, I mean, anything that's a mountable file system, it will go through and it will do that. And it will even, so, you know, even if your file is stored in a few different segments on your drive. So I think part of its mechanism, which, you know, it's not perfect, but if the directory entry is gone, you don't really have the map on
right.
where the sectors are. As long as the file is stored sequentially, like, you know, good reason for defragging, mm-hmm. as long as the file is stored sequentially, it should be able to retrieve all of it. And they claim they can do a little bit with some very simple occasions where, you know, a few more pieces are stored elsewhere. And I don't have all the specifics on exactly how that works. But it really does seem like a very powerful utility. But I tried to use PhotoRec on the directory that I nuked with the eraser utility, and it definitely could not get them back.
So was that the success of eraser or the failure of PhotoRec? I don't know which.
I think it's the success of eraser.
That's after 35 passes of random information, right?
Right. Nothing coming back from that.
That's bad.
So that's a great, you know, and again, standalone, free utility, you know, keep it in the toolbox and have it ready for if and when you need it.
Good.
All right, Doug, let's keep rolling. What's next?
Okay. Next one is actually an inquiry I got from one of my previous articles in Windows IT Pro magazine from a company called, I'm going to guess pronunciation, Networks, but it's NETWRIX. And they have a tool called the Active Directory Change Reporter. So I got a contact from one of their representatives, said, "So you've done all these free utilities. Did you know that we actually have a free version of this?" So I took a look at it, and actually it's a really good utility, and they were making it even better in the freeware version at the time I was, you know, talking with them. So it's networks.com, NETWRIX.com, and you follow the links for their Active Directory Change Reporting tool. Now, this one is a download and install application, but this is something that you probably would want to set up and run on a permanent basis. So you get a workstation within your organization that's, you know, it's an Active Directory, you know, it's defined in Active Directory, you have a user account in Active Directory. You install this utility on there, and then you give it a little bit of configuration environment about your Active Directory domain, some login credentials, and how you want it to, you know, do its process. Do you want it to output to HTML files? Do you want it to email, whatever? And what it'll do is it'll basically go in, the first time it runs, it'll kind of go in and just basically take a snapshot of your Active Directory environment. And Active Directory is, we're, you know, seeing now, you know, many, many years into its life, is becoming more and more the home for so many things in the configuration of your environment. I mean, Exchange stores, you know, almost all of its configuration details in there. Obviously, you have all your user details as well. So it, you know, and nothing wrong with that. It's actually a very robust, you know, multi-master replication platform. So that's all fine. But, you know, it's becoming more and more important. So knowing what changes, you know, from one day to the next,
yeah.
You know, is a very helpful tool. And in a you know, standard Windows environment, you don't really have that. You know, you, anytime you look in Active Directory, it's, you know, this is what it is now. It's not what it was yesterday. And if you've suddenly started experiencing problems, that's helpful information to have. So you configure this utility, and the first day it'll kind of take that initial snapshot. The second day, it will go ahead and it will say, okay, in comparison to yesterday, here's what's changed into your in your Active Directory environment. Maybe you've added new organizational units, or you moved a user from one OU to another, or you've reset somebody's password, or you know, you've gone ahead and you've deleted some sort of organizational unit, or whatever the structure is in there that's changed. It's going to give you a report on, you know, here's the object in Active Directory, here's what changed, here's when it changed. And the distinction on the freeware versus the commercial. Now, this is obviously a commercial app, but they try to give you, some good basic functionality for free, and I commend them for that, because I think this is actually really useful. The limitation in the utility in the freeware version is that it won't store long-term lists of changes, so you can't see what one particular object in Active Directory, how it changed over time.
Gotcha.
And it doesn't log who made the change. And when I initially took a look at this utility, I thought, well, you know, without those, it's an okay utility, and I wasn't sure it was going to make it into the Windows article. But they were updating it so that the utility can actually roll back changes.
Oh.
That in and of itself made it really, really compelling.
Well, it's blunder protection.
Exactly, exactly. So, you know, my recommendation in the article in Windows IT Pro was set this up in your environment, set up an email account in your Exchange server just to collect the daily reports from these and have it emailed out to there. And then if you want, you can kind of, and if you're a system administrator, the first, you know, week or so that you run this, you're going to look at this every single day, and then you're going to probably stop looking at it until something goes wrong. But if you've got that, you know, a mailbox that kind of has, you know, maybe the last 6 months worth of these, you can kind of go in and maybe search the emails for, you know, various indicators to see, okay, here's where we've changed over time. And again, the freeware won't tell you it was this user that made a change, and maybe in a large, 20,000 employee organization with
right.
lots of people that might be making changes, maybe the commercial version is the right way to go. But in smaller networks, you got a couple of guys that are administrators, you can at least, you know, maybe sort it down as to who made the change. And then you have that rollback function. You're like, okay, this got changed and now this is screwed up. So we're going to go ahead and we're just going to execute the rollback here, and it will roll it back to the previous state, which is really, really slick. So I like this utility.
Yeah, that's the one that tips me over. It's like, now that's just a safety valve. I want it around. It's just too easy to slip in Active Directory and accidentally delete a tree like this. It's easy to do.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, once you make one of those slips, and even if it's not a slip, even if it's just intentionally you thought, oh, I need to do this to fix it, and it turns out that was the wrong answer.
Yeah.
The ability for this to be able to get it back for you.
Get back without restoring backups and things. Like, being able to do this at a transactional level, that's really compelling.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, on a free utility. So, yeah. You know, kudos to these guys for putting this out there and allowing that much power for free.
All right, Doug, I think we got time for one more.
All right, we'll squeeze it in here. And I can't believe I missed this last time. And I can't believe that I missed this utility in the first three articles that I did for Windows IT Pro on free utilities. Nmap, the leading network security scanner out there, period. I mean, there's just no debate on it. This is on nmap.org. This utility is now 13 years old.
Wow.
And this utility is a celebrity.
Yeah.
This was, according to the Wikipedia page, this has been featured in three different movies, Matrix Reloaded, Die Hard 4, and The Bourne Ultimatum. So, you know, that's interesting when a utility has reached celebrity status like that. But it is probably the most powerful and comprehensive network security scanner I've ever come across. You can obviously do the basic, you know, provide an individual IP address, or provide a network subnet range, and it will go through and it will do all the basic scanning. But then it has a lot of advanced TCP/IP fingerprinting techniques, and, you know, ways to detect, you know, well, because, you know, the various packets we received in response were sequenced this way, or, you know, constructed, you know, this way, it will actually take very, very educated guesses on what versions of software you're actually running.
Right.
Wow. So I actually ran this against, you know, Wikipedia, and it came back saying, you know, well, that based on our detection, there's a 93% chance that it's running Ubuntu Linux. I just ran it a little bit ago. Sorry about this. As run as radio, and it came up with a 91% guess that run as radio was running on a Windows Server 2008, which may or may not be right. I'm not sure.
It is correct.
Okay, so you know it got it right. So that's kind of interesting, and it's not doing this just off of, oh, well, I opened up port, you know, 25
and
issued a hello and got this response back. I mean, it's doing some really, really cool fingerprinting types of techniques. So this is something where, you know, you can go ahead, run it throughout your whole network. It's got an amazing amount of command line flexibility to the point where really the first thing that you're going to want to do when you go to Nmap's site is download the ZenMap version of this, which is kind of a GUI build around the command line power of this.
Right.
And it gives you very basics, and it will actually show you the command line that it's building as you do it. So you can use the basic GUI, start to learn the command line power of this, and then you can really go on. So
I've used Nmap for years. I think one word of caution is it is possible to use Nmap with certain flags and certain settings. If you're in a production type environment or something, you want to be careful about how you're scanning and what you're scanning, and make sure that you, especially if you're, you know, scanning somebody else's stuff, that you have permission ahead of time.
Well, there's certainly those permission issues and legal issues, which I won't advocate doing this on anything that you don't know. But you know, and I've used this you know, just on, you know, some basic home devices, like, you know, I can tell that the Verizon FiOS router I have is you know, it's got Linux kernel on it and things like that. So there's interesting things there. But you know, in an enterprise environment where you might have people bringing in, you know, somebody might be plugging in a rogue access point for their work group or something like that. So you can have devices, you know, you got 20,000-30,000 device network, things might be appearing and disappearing all the time. So if you can track down where the IP address is, you can run tools like this and find out very aggressively, okay, we're getting some, you know, unauthorized devices on the network. Here's what they are, you know how to go after the problem and address it. So very, very powerful utility. It's hands down the best network scanner ever developed.
Awesome. Doug, I think we're over time, but we didn't want to stop you. This is such cool tools.
That's great info.
Yeah, stuff I've known about, but lots of stuff I didn't know about. So thanks so much for coming and talking to us.
It's my pleasure. You know, and I'll keep going and you know, digging up more of these, and we'll do another one again sometime soon.
You bet. And I'll have all of the URLs for all the tools that you've mentioned on the Run As site. So folks listening to this, go there if you want to get the links.
Thanks, Doug.
Thank you very much.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.